Chapter 2. He is somewhere deep beneath the ground, in a tunnel, perhaps, or a sewer. Light comes in flickers, defining the darkness, not dispelling it. He's not alone. There are other people walking beside him, although he cannot see their faces. They are running now through the inside of the sewer, splashing through the mud and filth. Droplets of water fall slowly through the air, crystal clear in the darkness. He turns a corner, and the beast is waiting for him. It is huge. It fills the space of the sewer, massive head down, a bristled body and breath steaming in the chill of the air. Some kind of boar, he thinks at first, and then realizes that that must be nonsense. No boar could be so huge. It is the size of a bull, of a tiger, of a car. It stares at him, and it pauses for 100 years while he lifts his spear. He glances at his hand holding the spear and observes that it is not his hand. The arm is furred with dark hair. The nails are almost claws. And then the beast charges. He throws his spear, but it is already too late, and he feels the beast slice his side with razor-sharp tusks, feels his life slip away into the mud, and he realizes he has fallen face down into the water, which crimsons in thick swirls of suffocating blood. And he tries so to scream, he tries to wake up, but he can breathe only mud and blood and water. He can feel only pain.
"Bad dream?" asked the girl.
Richard sat up on the couch, gasping for breath. The curtains were still drawn, the lights and the television still on, but he could tell from the pale light coming in through the cracks that it was morning. He fumbled on the couch for the remote control, which had wedged itself into the small of his back during the night, and turned off the television. "Yes," he said, "sort of." He wiped away the sleep grit that crusted his eyes and took stock of himself, pleased to notice that he had at least taken off his shoes and jacket before he had fallen asleep. His shirt front was covered with dried blood and with dirt. The homeless girl didn't say anything. She looked bad, pale beneath the grime and brown dried blood, and small. She was dressed in a variety of clothes thrown over each other. Odd clothes, dirty velvets, muddy lace, rips and holes through which other layers and styles could be seen. She looked, Richard thought, as if she'd done a midnight raid on the History of Fashion section of the Victoria and Albert Museum and was still wearing everything she'd taken. Her short hair was filthy, but looked like it might have been a dark reddish colour under the dirt. If there was one thing Richard really hated, it was people who stated the obvious. The kind of people who came up to him and said things that he was incapable of failing to notice for himself, such as, for example, "It's raining," or "The bottom just dropped out of your shopping bag and your food just fell into that puddle," or even, "Ooh, I bet that hurts." "You're up then," said Richard, and hated himself. "Whose barony is this?" asked the girl. "Whose fiefdom?" Sorry? She looked around her suspiciously. "Where am I?" "Flat 4, Newton Mansions, Little Comden Street." He stopped. She had opened the curtains, blinking at the cold daylight. The girl stared out at the rather ordinary view from Richard's window, astonished, peering wide-eyed at the cars and the buses and the tiny sprawl of shops, a newsagent's, a baker's, a chemist's, and an off-licensed liquor store below them. "I'm in London above," she said, in a small voice. "Yes, you're in London," said Richard. "Above what?" he wondered. "I think maybe you were in shock or something last night. That was a nasty cut on your arm." He waited for her to say something to explain. She glanced at him and then looked back down at the buses and the shops. Richard continued, I found you on the pavement. There was rather a lot of blood." "Don't worry," she said seriously. "Most of the blood was someone else's." She let the curtain fall back.
Then she began to unwrap the scarf, now blood-stained and crusted, from her arm. She examined the cut and made a face.
"We're going to have to do something about this," she said. "Do you want to give me a hand?"
Richard was beginning to feel a little out of his depth.
"I don't really know too much about first aid," he said.
"Well," she said, "if you're really squeamish, you only have to hold the bandages and tie the bits I can't reach. You do have bandages, don't you?"
Richard nodded.
"Oh, yes," he said, "in the first aid box. In the bathroom. Under the sink." And then he went into his bedroom and changed his clothes and wondered whether the mess on his shirt, his best shirt, bought for him by, oh God, Jessica, she would have kittens, would ever come off.